This is Should We Just Watch It Real Quick? The only podcast where one of the co-hosts will do a massive sigh as the other one is doing the intro. I am Dr. Damien Gibson. I didn't go to 114 years of frustration school to be called fuckhead. Thank you very much. And in the blue corner, it's the Italian girl, and she will fucking rip your fucking arms off and not even think about it. She is Kelly Big Whoop. Wanna fight about it for Stuka? Here she is.
We can't wake the babies.
Don't wake the baby.
Baby, I'll go a little baby.
I'll never tell. That's who Evie is.
It's Brittany Murphy.
Popular. Yeah. Evie is a model.
I know. She's a model. I took her to this new groomer near where we live, and they're called
dog groomer, not Kevin Spacey.
No. Oh, hello, here we go, mate. Righto. They're called Poodle and Hound, and they're so great because she's obviously just like her mother, full of anxiety, and she can't handle getting groomed and that. And they've been working really close with her, and I just posted a picture that they did. They did a little Christmas photo shoot with her. They put a little red bow around her neck,
yeah.
And they zhuzhed up her hair. They were finally able to get her to use a dryer, and she was just so beautiful. And now she's asleep on me, so we can't wake her.
Yeah, this might be our Christmas gift from the universe, is that Evie sleeps through a whole podcast record. But we love her so much. We love her so much. She escaped from a friend's place yesterday, gave us a heart attack. Mm. We thought we'd lost her for about a minute and a half. And then
I
found her in a neighbor's garden just smelling a daffodil
like a hippie. You called her a hippie.
Yeah, like a giant hippie.
Yeah, you're like, she's just a hippie just sniffing. I'm like, but I just grabbed her. I was like, you scared your mum half to death.
Yeah.
Like, I was just beside myself. Like
manic puppy dream girl.
Oh, man. Sometimes you hear about people whose, like, dogs have died because they got hit by a car, and I just, like, everything I do in my life is to never be. Like, never feel what that feels like.
I do it for you.
Mum's had that happen before. La, 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 la. And I just like, nah. And it was a dog just like Jimmy. Nah. I'll die before I let that happen.
Well, you heard it here first. Kelly is locking our dogs in a room and they're not allowed to come out except to eat and be on the podcast.
Well, that's why I just get so nervous when I have to, like, leave them somewhere for babysitting. Like, if we go out for a few hours, you can't leave them on their own for that long. Maybe one day, like, maybe when she's not so puppy-y and her bladders are better, but I don't know. It's just not good.
Hmm.
I mean, maybe if I set up a camera in here so I can watch them, you know what I mean? Then that might be better.
Hmm.
But yeah, and it's just like, sometimes I leave them with my mum, and bless my mum, but she's very, it's fine. Everything's fine.
Yeah, but the way boomers look after pets is basically the same way that they looked after us.
It'll be fine. Walk it off.
Hands off the wheel.
Yeah, just walk it off. You'll be fine.
Ah, just let Jesus drive.
Oh, it's just, you know, like, and they're always like, there was a weird end of the street gathering in our new street, and I thought I would be neighborly and just show up and go, hello. Before I leave, and
hello, jealous.
And I brought Jimmy with me because I didn't know anyone, and a dog is a really good, you know, conversation starter. And before I even blinked, a boomer was giving him part of a party pie.
Yeah.
And I just like, and then this other chick who had her little dachshund, I turned to her and I went, oh, well, he's going to have diarrhea for the next few days. And she like nodded because she's like, yeah. Because she gets it, you know.
Where listen, the Boomergeddon is already upon us, but it's only going to get
Boomergeddon.
Worse. You guys are going to notice it more and more. Christmas is coming up. You're going to notice. You're like, oh, my parents are fucking insane. It's the lead in their brains from all the paint that they ate when they were kids.
Smoking in the car with the windows
smoking up. In the car, eating steaks for breakfast. Like they're having, you know, all their arteries are completely clogged and
every
carotid.
Time I watch Mad Men, I'm more like the way that they are in Mad Men. It's like it just solidifies how.
Well, our parents were babies when that was happening, but yeah, it does give you an idea of how the greatest generation parented them.
Mm.
which is even more fucked up, you know. But, oh, boy, gee, we've only got another 5 to 10 years and then we can get through Boomageddon and hopefully come together as a civilization and rebuild. Because that's what all of this is. It's them just trying to cling on to everything that they have before they die. Merry Christmas, everybody. This is the Christmas episode that's coming out on Christmas Eve. So you're either listening to this as you bunker down in your apartments waiting for your family to show up and tell you everything that you've done wrong this year, or you're driving halfway across the state to go and see a family that have told you everything that you've done wrong this year. Anyway, you're about to get told how terrible a person you are, and so we thought we'd brighten your lives by a bit of back and forth banter from a husband and wife team and talk about what we've watched and then also Lethal Weapon.
I mean,
you watch so much more TV than me.
I mean, the joy that everyone is about to experience with Christmas by seeing, you know, uncles who have a real problem with Welcome to Country for no reason.
It's done absolutely nothing to them. They've got to wait an extra 3 minutes for a football game to start, so therefore it's the end of the fucking world.
Oh, come on, man. Oh, where's my Welcome to Country?
Oh, come on again. Oh, Welcome to Country.
You don't get one because you benefited from all of the fucking pluses in this world and that got taken away. You benefited from immense healthcare, free uni, multiple houses, cheap land. Fuck you.
They're so out of touch. They don't even know. Like,
they don't know how much things cost.
They don't even know. They're like,
they don't know how much things cost. Like, yeah.
It's like when a president gets asked, you know, how much is a liter of milk? And they go, I don't know, 40 cents or whatever. That's what boomers are like. They just
like, sometimes I feel when I'm talking to like one of our parents and I, you know, we talk about mortgages or house or whatever.
Yeah.
I genuinely believe that every boomer in our lives that I talk to about that stuff, they think that we're spending money frivolously.
Yeah, yeah.
Right? Like every time they hear someone's like, oh, the mortgage is a bit tough, you know, interest rates, they're like, oh, well, you know. Oh,
we
well.
Had 18%.
Oh, well. Oh,
18%.
Well.
It's but like, they don't hey, know. Listen, fuckheads, 18% of zero is still zero.
And the
you
thing
know
is,
what I mean?
I know.
If you're paying nothing on your fucking mortgage and then the interest rates go up to 18%, doesn't mean shit. When you've had to take out $3 trillion loan to buy a two-bedroom apartment in Melton, you know what I mean?
I know that there is a difference between what we earn today and what they earned back then. And I know there's a difference between what house.
A huge difference.
What house costs now and what house costs then.
Yeah.
But when you work it out, when you ratio it, like annual income and house price in 1972 compared to income now and house prices, it correlates, right? I know that you were earning $200 a week. It's 1972. And that, you know, we're earning 1,000. But when you correlate that compared to how much house prices have gone up, it means that we have to be earning like $400,000.
Yes. Wages haven't kept up with inflation.
But they don't understand that. They just think that we don't save.
They understand it. They just play dumb.
No, they think that we don't know how to save. They think that we're like buying too much bread.
Cal, it serves their purpose to be like, oh, these generations. Because then they can hold on to all their money. They don't have to feel.
Didn't earn it. We earned it.
If they play dumb, then they don't have to feel bad about not passing on any of their wealth to anybody. You know what I mean? Like they know that. They know it. But anyway.
Mate.
Boomers. Can't kill them. Can't shoot them. That's a bit harsh.
We love our boomers, but it's just like, I just hate this underlying thing about we don't know what we're doing and, you know, we're frivolous. And
yeah,
we,
especially blah, when blah, every blah. Single thing was gifted to them, especially in Australia.
Everything was gifted
every
to them.
Single fucking thing. Like, you know, yeah, I mean, every degree that's in my family. Oh, here's an example. My uncle, when I was about 32, was like, why haven't you bought a house yet? I was like, I don't have a fucking job. I don't have a job that can pay to buy a house. Mm. And he's like, well, you just have to buy a house further out. That's what we did. And you know where he bought his house? People who live in Melbourne. Coburg.
You've got to suffer like I did and buy a house Coburg. In Coburg.
For anyone who doesn't live in Melbourne, that is legitimately, because I've done it, an hour's walk from the middle of the CBD.
Yeah.
Right? So what, 10-minute drive from the middle of the CBD? There's one suburb, two suburbs between the middle of the CBD and Coburg. CBD, Carlton, Brunswick, Coburg. And this motherfucker was sitting there telling me, like, you've just got to move further out. Now, we did end up doing that. It is an hour and a half drive from where we live to the middle of the city. And it's shit like that that
is annoying.
Just makes you want to fucking put these guys up against the wall.
Well, it's funny because
where are the guillotines? Should we get some guillotines out here?
Well, it's funny because I was talking to my mum because I was like, you know, we've got to go out for a few hours. Can you mind the dogs? And I said, you know, I go, if it was a mate who lived nearby, we wouldn't do it. But because it's an hour there and an hour back, that's 2 hours already.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? And then if we're there for 2 hours, that's 4 hours. If it was a mate who lived next door, it wouldn't be an issue. We wouldn't need you to babysit because we wouldn't be gone for that long. But when you're looking at over 2 hours of a commute, yeah. And she's like, oh, well. And she made it was something like, oh, well, not you shouldn't have moved so far away, but oh, why'd you move so far away then? And I'm like, oh, what do you think?
You live here.
Yeah, but also, you live here. No, and I said also, to her, I go, because we couldn't afford to live in that side of the sea, mate. Couldn't afford it.
And our friends who did buy in those areas are struggling pretty hard.
Well, you know, everyone has really high mortgages. And yeah. We decided instead of living paycheck to paycheck, we would, you know, get a more affordable house further out so we weren't suffocated. But we're also paying for IVF at the same time. So that was another big indicator of, you know, if we could put more money into the mortgage, we can't because the medical bills are just too high.
There's a serious
it's just so fucking dumb.
There's a serious empathy deficit with that generation.
Yeah.
And I'm telling you, they play dumb. They play so dumb resentful. Because it suits their fucking narrative.
Why am I so resentful about it all? It's just because sometimes it's
because everything's been set from us down. Everything's been stacked against us, and then when we dare bring it up, we get told by everybody who's in control of everything to be like,
"Too much avocados.
Well, shut the fuck up! You buy coffee. Yeah. Well, if you didn't buy coffee, you'd be able to afford a fucking private jet.
We don't know how to do it hard. We don't know. You know, I've literally stolen toilet paper from bars because I couldn't afford to buy toilet paper that week.
I lived in a squat.
Anyway.
I lived in a fucking squat when I was an alcoholic and a fucking drug addict. But yeah, no, I haven't overcome anything.
Lots of avocado in this
house.
What
are we talking about? So many avocados. We buy them all the time. Sometimes we buy avocados and just fucking throw them into the river.
I think we should talk about what our favorite Christmas movie is.
Okay. Ever?
Yep.
Now, okay, I want you to set some parameters. Is it... Does it have to be like a meaning of Christmas movie or just any movie that's set at Christmas?
Any movie that's set at Christmas.
I have a real soft spot for a film called Ernest Saves Christmas.
Aw, I don't think I've seen it.
Because me and my sister watched it every year. Channel 7 would just show it. It would either be like Christmas Eve or Christmas Eve at like midday. Bless you.
Oh, sorry.
I can't tell you what happens in it. Ernest Saves Christmas, but it was just fun. I mean, I love the film we're going to talk about today, Lethal Weapon. I think that's a really fun action movie.
Ernest Saves Christmas, really? Not some German film called Krampusstussklimpler that is like, you know, one of the penultimate Christmas movies. If, you know, if you ask Orson Welles, he'll tell you. Yeah, come on, wanky Damien.
No, people with brains don't make films about Christmas. I don't know. What's a film that's set at Christmas that's great? Like a great film?
I would think that you have like a really wanky kind of, you know,
You're right there.
Yeah.
There's a fair bit of aggression coming through
there's
in your tone.
Aggression? No, there's no aggression. There's no aggression at all. I'm just saying that
it's no aggression at all, she said through clenched teeth.
I'm just saying that you're someone who normally is, you know.
Oh, there it is, the Peyton and Callie yawn halfway through.
It's not feeling great.
Yeah, neither is the feeling 100%. I don't know. Home Alone is great. I think that's a really – I think that is like the you know, upper echelon American Hollywood Christmas movie.
Right.
You know? But then, you know, It's a Wonderful Life, you know – There are good Christmas movies.
Right. Well, I've got a Christmas movie that you haven't mentioned, which, and I reckon I've talked about it on the pod probably last Christmas.
Yeah.
But it's a movie called Rare Exports, semicolon, A Christmas Tale.
Right.
And it was made in 2010. It's a Finnish fantasy action horror comedy.
Yeah.
So this is the kind of film that I thought you would be like all over. Well, looks like the spider caught himself a couple of flies. And it is – so basically, I'm pretty sure – sorry if I'm repeating myself. But anyway, it's a Finnish movie, has subtitles, basically set up in, you know, as close to the North Pole as possible. The tagline for the film is, this Christmas, everyone will believe in Santa Claus. And the cover of it is like – I don't know if you can see. The cover of it is like everyone holding guns and like a cage, a cage behind them with Santa Claus in a cage.
Yeah.
So basically, this horrible company is drilling for oil in one of the mountains up there, and they hit a bunch of sawdust, fitting, sawdust, you know, from toys.
Yep.
So they hit all this sawdust, and then it's like, oh, it's weird. And then there's this like rock they can't penetrate, and the guy's like, I don't know how you'd say this in Finnish, but he's like, sunken dagen, which is like, keep digging, because they're greedy. And they open up some world down below in the South Pole or North Pole.
Yep.
And basically these like Santa Clauses come out, and they're like it. They're like got the teeth, and they because all of a sudden people's reindeers get mauled to death. Yeah,
right.
And they're like, what is that? So yeah, there's all these like weird elf Santa Claus types that are like and they're like they've got a lust for blood. And so they're trying to protect themselves against that. And then basically they are just the smaller element to what was really down below, which was a massive horned devil that has now been unleashed onto the world.
Mm-hmm.
And it's funny, but it's Christmassy, but it's also like it's great because you're like, oh, what a great concept.
Yeah.
Like they're drilling for oil. They find Santa's, but Santa's like, it's like a fucking demon. It's really good. It's good. It's good. And the Santa Clauses, like...
So that's your favorite Christmas movie of all time?
I mean, it's up there because it's so weird and silly.
Yeah.
But it's made really well. Like, it's just you really capture the coldness of where they are. And it's like a son, like that he lost his mother. So it's just like a son and husband who are doing it tough and just... But they end up being the heroes because they're the ones who kind of go, what's happening with the reindeer? Mm. Like, why? Oh, it must be a wolf. You know, wolves don't have teeth like this. Mm. It's just, you know, I don't know. There was a time where Love Actually was probably my favorite.
We did that 2 Christmases ago.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, I don't know.
It doesn't hold up well.
No. Maybe. Yeah, I mean, that's the thing. It was a time when it was that. I mean, I love Die Hard. Even though it's not a Christmas movie, it's only set in Christmas, but I still feel like that's still justified. Mm. What about
Batman Returns?
Oh, yeah. I don't know.
Bruce Wayne? What are you doing dressed up as Batman? It's like Christopher Walken plays that weird character in.
Yeah.
And then he finds Batman, he's got his mask ripped off, and he's like, Bruce Wayne, what are you doing dressed up as Batman? And then Michelle Pfeiffer is like, as Catwoman, she's like, because he is Batman, you idiot.
I think good it's times. Like, good times. I think it's like the TV shows as well. Like, I always like a Simpsons episode that's Christmassy.
Yeah. Well, the first episode's a Christmas episode, right? With Santa's Little Helper.
Yeah.
That's a classic episode.
Yeah. But... I don't know, maybe I'm just
all trying. The Friends episodes are good.
Yeah, the armadillo. Remember the armadillo?
Yeah.
Holiday thing? That's good.
Yeah, but it's
they
fun.
Have really good Thanksgiving episodes.
That's they the do. Thing. The Thanksgiving episodes are their thing.
Yeah. America yeah. is more Thanksgiving-y than it is Christmassy. Because they have a lot of Jews.
Well, maybe if they accepted the light and love of our Lord Jesus Christ into their life a little bit, listen, they wouldn't have so many problems.
I don't know if JC really exists. I think it was made up. But, you know, each to their own. I don't know. I think, yeah, I don't... It's a Wonderful Life, yeah. I mean, I don't know.
You know what TV episode I love is the Office Christmas special.
Yeah, because it's got the Paul McCartney song, "The World Is Out, There's Another Bed
in
a Wonderful Christmas Time."
Yeah, this is the English Office Christmas special. The reason why I love it is it's very British, so it's still
Oh, what about the bear? What about the Christmas episode of the bear?
Fishers is, yeah. That's, I mean, I don't know whether you would put that on with the family to to celebrate Christmas, but it is an amazing piece of TV.
And how lame was the Ted Lasso one? Ooh.
I don't even really remember.
They go around, they go around finding a dentist, right. And then they sing. They like, the blonde chick's got pipes, and then they come out and sing to people. Shut up, Ted.
But the thing I love about the Office Christmas special is that at the end of season two of The Office, it was left pretty dark. Like David Brent gets fired and Dawn and Tim don't get together. And so there was a lot of kind of, not backlash, but like talk of like, oh, it would have been nice if there was some light at the end of this show. And the BBC were putting a lot of pressure on Gervais and Merchant to do a third season and sort of wrap everything up. You know, it's like, can you give us some sort of happy ending? You know, like everyone wants to see Dawn and Tim together. Can you make that happen? Blah, blah. And so they compromised. They're like, we'll do a Christmas special and we will get Tim and Dawn to get together. But it still needs to be realistic. But what I love about that episode is the little win that David Brent gets.
Yeah, he goes on that nice date.
That whole, yeah, and he brings his date and stuff. But the whole of that show, he just wants to be seen as a leader and a hero, and that people look up to him. That's all he wants in life, is some recognition as being this like great man. And really, the only moment in his whole life that he does that is when he tells Finchie to fuck off.
Yeah.
You know? It's pretty great. In that brief, glimmering moment, he gets what he wants, you know? And you know that he's going to revert back to being fucking David Brent. You know, that this isn't going to be like some big, you know, hero's journey where he's like changed as a person. He reverts straight back to who he is after that. But it's such a nice... It's a really good sort of example of writing to compromise, because a lot of the time in TV you have to do that because the people who give you the money to make the shows will ask you to do things, but doing it in a way that's still sort of artistically genuine. And it's fun. It's a fun, you know, it gives you a very good look at what Christmas parties are actually like. In an office, they're pretty dull and dire fucking things, and most people get pissed out of their brains to just get through them. And that most people at that point of the year reflect on how unhappy they are rather than, you know, it's Christmas, yay! It's more like, oh, fuck, it's fucking Christmas and nothing's changed and I'm still in this job. And as much as I'm not a massive Ricky Gervais fan these days, I mean, I think his stand-up's brilliant.
Fuck off.
I'm joking. I'm being sarcastic. But that's a great episode.
I think that the Christmas episodes for The American Office are all really good.
Yeah.
So, because I was just looking at a list of them because I couldn't think of the name. The one with Dwight where he talks about the Belschnickel. That's really good. Impish? What was the thing? It was Impish and something else. Anyway. Dude, that's so funny. And then there's the one where Michael is Santa. Yeah. And Kevin sits on his lap and he's like, ugh. And then there's the one where Phyllis wants to be Santa, yeah. and they fight, and he's just sitting there with the mic, just shitting on everyone.
Yeah.
And the snowball fight, like, man, there's heaps of really good Christmas episodes with those guys. Moroccan Christmas.
Isn't there one where Jim and Pam send Dwight on a CIA mission at the end of it, and like they get a helicopter to come in and take him? Or they tell him.
Oh, they tell him to wait on the top. Yeah, yeah, they put him on a secret mission.
And he just stays on. Yeah,
yeah. Man, it's like so much like because they're trying to outprank each other. Dude, and there's on the snowball fight, you know, when and Jimmy's like losing.
Yeah.
And he drives it, like all the snowmen are outside and he can tell he's having a breakdown.
Yeah.
<It's> so great. Yeah. Because I'm just like rereading them all. I'm like, man, there's some really good, like, yeah, Michael's outraged when Jim allows Phyllis to drop us up as Santa.
Doctor Who Christmas specials are pretty good.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
I'm trying to think of any Australian things. Not really.
No. We don't have TV shows here. We don't need them, apparently. But we do need a lot of, you know, Married at First Sights and stuff. So that's good. That's good. Yeah. Good job, everybody.
It's working really well for our society.
Yeah. Got some real good stuff.
Yeah. People aren't getting dumber at all. They're
so cynical. God, we're so cynical.
Yeah, but we're correct.
But we did watch Lethal Weapon.
We did watch Lethal Weapon.
Christmas movie, and it's good, man. It still holds up. It still holds up. It's fantastic.
Shane Black, great screenwriter.
Yeah. Gary Busey's crazy.
Gary Busey's so fucking batshit crazy in this film. Danny Glover is great.
He's great.
He's great, man. He's so magnetic and easy to watch.
Yeah.
Now, listen, guys.
Mel Gibson.
Come close to the speaker. Come close to the headphones. We don't like
you're that. Supposed to blow me in the jacuzzi.
You make me want to smoke. We don't like Mel Gibson. We don't think he's a very nice guy. But we are going to say some positive things about him in this film. Because he's good in it. Right? He is a movie star. He's magnetic. You know, he's not the first person to be an absolute fucking nut job prick of a person. To be in movies, you know, like.
Yeah, I mean, I think that this movie, I feel like it was the first of its kind where you have the cop who's just got nothing to lose. On the edge because his wife died and now he's a drunk, but he'll kill you, but he still wants to be a cop.
But what's different about that? What's different about Riggs in this film in comparison to, say, like Dirty Harry, which is the quintessential cop 10 years earlier, is that Dirty Harry's just like, he's just completely stoic and you don't know why. There's no backstory for it. It's just like he's just a hard ass, you know. And
did you find out later?
No. No, it's just the way he is. You know what I mean?
It's like, just a bit of a shit, huh?
Whereas Riggs, he's a loose cannon, but you find out that he's on the edge of suicide. Because
his wife
had just died. But like, as much as that's a trope, it wasn't that much of a trope when this film came out. It's become a trope in the 40 years since, you know. And Mel Gibson is irrefutable in this film. Like he's great at the action sequences. He's super handsome.
He's charming.
His hair is crazy. He's super charming. However, his American accent is almost non-existent. He gets like two words into a sentence with an American accent and then it's full blown, and he's got that full blown like 70s like exploitation, like Ozploitation.
Yeah.
No, it's, you know, he sounds like Jack Thompson.
It just,
you
know? It goes in and out because he'd be like, you know what I mean? I think it's important that we go over there.
Over like, there?
Yeah. It goes in and out a bit. Oh, come on. No, nay.
No.
Like it just comes in and out.
Oh, come on, Rog.
He wouldn't have had a dialect coach back in the day.
Jesus, you'd think there'd be some dialect coach. I mean, it's a huge movie. It's a huge fucking...
And was it his first movie?
I think that might be the first American movie. He had done Gallipoli.
Yeah, let me find out.
Mad Max.
Because Mad Max made him a big whoop.
Yeah, I also think Gallipoli did quite well as well.
I think Gallipoli led to Mad Max. Let me find out.
Okay.
He's 67. Yeah, wow.
There are parts in this film. We were sitting here watching it and like every time it came up in the film, I was teasing his accent, making Cal laugh. But there was a part where he was on the what are they called? The little over. Let's. What are those things called? CB mic. CB radio. It's amazing as soon as you get in front of a microphone, you can't fucking remember anything. And his accent was so Australian that all the call signs might as well have been marsupials. You know what I mean? Like platypus to goanna over.
Kookaburra to witchetty grub over. It always sounded like that.
The kookaburra is by the billabong. The kookaburra is by the billabong.
He went to NIDA with Judy Davis. Oh. And they were in a very famous production of Romeo and Juliet together.
Oh.
And then from there, he was cast in Gallipoli in 81.
What are your legs?
Steel Springs. No?
Yeah.
That's it.
That's right. Oh, yeah. I don't. We're going to do the whole thing.
What
are they going to do?
I'm going to run as fast
Hurl me down the track.
Oh, that's right.
What are you as fast as? I'm as fast as a
leopard.
I'm as fast as a fucking witchetty grub.
As a witchetty grub. So Mad Max. Okay, here we go. So Mad Max was 79.
Ooh.
Mad Max was 79. It was the
summer of 79.
And then Gallipoli and Mad Max 2 were 81. And then he did The Year of Living Dangerously, which I don't think I've ever seen.
Is that with Kurt Russell?
Sigourney Weaver, Bill Kerr, Michael Murphy, Linda Hunt, Noel Ferrier.
Yeah. Is it an Australian film?
Screenplay, yeah, Peter Weir, directed by Peter Weir, David Williamson. Okay,
right. I was thinking the wrong film. I was thinking of Tequila Sunrise, is that?
So after that, there was The Bounty, which I don't know much about. The Bounty, I mean, it looks, that could have been the Kurt Russell one.
Anthony Hopkins.
And Laurence Olivier.
Yeah.
Oh, I've never seen that. Man, what are all these Bell Gibson movies? Anyway, and then there's two other ones. Then that's our 82. Then 85 is Thunderdome. We don't need another.
Right.
Then 87, Lethal Weapon.
Right.
So it took him 6 years to go from, 6 to 7 years to go from Mad Max originally, but it was working. Then Lethal Weapon made him, because that was 1987, and that's when he was on the cover of People magazine as Sexiest Man Alive.
Sexiest Man Alive.
And then Tequila Sunrise was the next year, 88.
Right.
And then number two, Bird on a Wire, Air America, Hamlet, Forever Young. Ugh. Lethal Weapon again, Man Without a Face, Maverick. Braveheart. I feel like Braveheart was the big whoop for him.
Yeah.
Braveheart was a massive big whoop.
Well, he directed that.
And then just kind of did a bunch of like Ransom, Father's Day, Conspiracy Theory. Who would have thought a movie called Conspiracy Theory would really be more in line with what he's up to? Because there's a lot of like nothings that he's like, it's all like Lethal Weapon, Payback, Chicken Run, The Patriot, What Woman Want.
Oh, yeah.
Million Dollar Hotel, blah, blah, blah. Signs was good though. With like M like Shyamalana Ding Dong.
Shyamalana Ding Dong. Yeah.
But I'd never watched Passion of Christ because I just didn't want to.
Yeah, no.
I just didn't want to. I just felt like, ugh, you know what I mean? Oh, controversies. Glad accused Gibson of homophobia after a 91 interview in a Spanish newspaper. He defended comments and rejected calls to apologize, even as he, blah, 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 of Braveheart. Man, it's so funny. Like, it's like he was just a ticking time bomb. I shouldn't have said it, but I was tickling a bit of vodka during the interview. The quote came back to bite me in the ass. Well, yeah. I mean, you said it because you obviously believe it. So what are we even, you know what I mean?
What are we doing?
And that's just the beginning. According to a 2011 article in Vanity Fair, he got arrested for speeding under the influence. My life is over. I'm fucked. Robin's going to leave me. According to the arrest report, he exploited angry tirade with the officer, blah, 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 something about being Jewish. Yeah. Gibson said to the arresting officer, fucking Jews, the Jews are responsible for all the wars in the world. Are you a Jew? Oh, shit.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, my
God. But Jodie Foster thinks he's a great guy and should be accepted back into Hollywood.
Oh,
so,
my God. Yeah. And that was like 2011.
Good work, Jodie.
He's awesome. Worked a ton since then.
Yeah. Off the back of Jodie Foster doing essentially a press tour, talking about how good a guy is and he's misunderstood. It was leaked. Blah, blah, blah.
So it was all kept under wraps and then TMZ leaked it and then he issued two separate apologies.
TMZ.
Yep.
It's done. Oh, mate.
And then he did a Diane Sawyer interview where he like was like, apologize, despicable behavior, blah, 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 and went into recovery to battle his alcoholism.
Oh, right, yeah.
And then in 2010.
I managed to battle my alcoholism without being a fucking racist cunt, but anyway.
Oh, my God, dude, I can't. I'm not going to do it. Okay, I'm going to leave this alone, but I'm just going to say, guys, go to Wikipedia and read the – so he got married to this Russian model and the – she ended up recording all their calls because
oh my god,
she accused him of abuse and no one believed her, whatever. And some of the stuff he fucking says to her, like N-word stuff, it is fucked.
It's also taped as well. Like you can hear the audio.
You can hear the audios and he
sounds insane. Like,
he's like,
like it's fuck it, it's mental. Listen, as a representative of the Gibson family, there's a lot of psychos in the family. There really is. And I'm sure at some point we are related to Mel because his behavior is not that far removed from a lot of behavior in the Gibsons that I know.
But
however, we are not racist. We're not.
No, your family's not racist.
No.
No. They're angry. Got a lot of problems.
Angry
people,
psycho. We come from an angry people.
Leftist.
But so far the opposite direction.
Yeah, unionists and not racist. Gibson's controversy stated, okay, so he was blacklisted from Hollywood. Both Robert Downey Jr. Advocated for his forgiveness in 2014. And then he did a film, blah, blah, blah.
Well, hang on. You said both.
Oh, another was a journalist, a female journalist. They advocated for his forgiveness.
There's nothing in there about Jodie Foster doing a fucking year-long press tour.
I'm sure if I read more, it would come up.
Well, it happened, so.
No, I'm not saying it didn't happen.
I'm saying to our audience it happened.
No, I know it happened. I know Jodie was like, he's a real great guy, you know.
I'm saying, it happened.
Mel Gibson's a great guy. Was that more Holly Hunter?
Yeah. It's not bad.
Why are the lambs screaming? Hello, Clarice.
It's my birthday.
It's my birthday. It's the happiest I've ever been.
This is that.
It's my birthday. It's a great SNL sketch. Hello, Clarice. Not quite Detective Sterling. Not quite detective yet. I wonder why. It's good. Let's watch songs.
Can you just do voices?
Yeah.
I just want to do some voices. Okay. I would like to hear Selena Gomez ordering a capricciosa pizza.
Pizza. Why are we doing a pizza? What's on this pizza? But then she gets morphed into, you know, like she's like, hey, my name's Selena Gomez and I'm ordering a pizza. It's holy words. I know it's what's mine. Or he had me.
Right.
You know? Like they were more than one.
That feels like one shade away from James Blunt as well.
Yeah. I went to the toilet before recorded, but I'm actually busting.
Well,
but it's been 40 minutes, right?
38.
So listen, one thing I can take away from Lethal Weapon is one thing is that I wanted to smoke so badly.
You make me want to smoke.
You make me want to smoke. I could not stop wanting to smoke watching this fucking film.
Everybody smokes all day.
But like inside, like they're just like sitting at a desk and like, oh, there's my ashtray next to my keyboard and mouse at my office desk. I'm like, fuck yeah. I'm so jealous. Anyway.
Fuck yeah.
Actually, I'm sorry. All right. So I reckon I give it 4 grumps. I actually really like Lethal Weapon. I thought it was really good. I thought everyone was really good in it. Makes me want to watch number 2 and number 3, especially the Joe Pesci one.
Yeah.
So I think maybe we should do that. We should watch 2 and 3.
Yeah, we can do that.
Yeah.
I'll give it 3.5 grumps only because I forgot about like the last 15 minutes of the film where I feel like it really falls off a cliff.
Yeah.
Like the fight between there's this sort of like Mel Gibson and Gary Busey were like in the front yard
fighting.
Yeah, they're
like
in the front yard fighting,
combat.
But the reason why they need to fight each other is because they were in the same Marine Corps, but like they don't really
They don't really explain that.
They don't really explain it. It kind of gets talked about in like one sentence.
And Donnie Glover's like, let him. They got to do this.
Yeah, they've got to sort it
out. Like, there's 100 cops around. There's a plane in the air. A helicopter, like all this shit, and it's like, oh, you know what? Boys will be boys. Just let them fight it out.
Yeah, it's weird.
I thought it was weird.
It's weird.
Anyway, I'm gonna wet myself.
Oh, baby
girl. I'm just gonna say I love you really quickly as you wrap up.
Yeah, Merry Christmas, everybody. We love you very much. The audience continues to go up, and now that we're on RSS.com, we can actually see how many of you guys are downloading the podcast, and it's quite a few. So we really appreciate that. Me and Kel love doing this. We really. Really do. We appreciate everybody who listens to this. It is a lot of work and mucking around. I know I hate listening to podcasts where they talk about that as if like we're doing you guys a favor for making a podcast. We're not. We love doing this and you guys do us a massive favor by listening to us. So thank you very much. Please have a fantastic Christmas and a wonderful new year. We're going to hope to keep doing this weekly, but as you both know, there are mental health stuff and blah, blah, and so sometimes we don't get an episode out. But yeah, we love you guys. Thank you so much. Have a great Christmas and we'll talk to you in the new year.